I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Okay, so I'm having a hard time holding it together here today because, meaning not crying, but laughing, in case you're wondering which way I was struggling with holding it together, because I'm looking across the screen and I've got Melinda here and she's making me laugh because she's laughing. And behind me is my son, John. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Making actually, special John, guest appearances.
He's the culprit. He's... If people only knew, I've been laughing for minutes here. You too. You should just have had this running while you two were talking with each other.
Oh, the video. I wondered if he was doing like rabbit ears behind my head or something. It wasn't that.
Ooh, see, now you put that idea in my head.
I know.
I wasn't even going there. But
thankfully, it's only audio on the podcast.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Okay. So we decided to get together. John is not here that often. In fact, it's the first time
yes,
he's been
this is the first time
Sarasota.
I've been down to Florida to see the new
Sarasota compound, I like to call it.
John, what do you think about the new place, and are you so proud of your mom and Mike?
It's delightful. It's been really fun being here, and yes, I am proud of them.
And I will say that John saw the place before Mike did. I had seen it, and he just was
Lara,
over
let
the
me,
moon.
Let me describe this experience. I was down visiting my grandma and grandpa over Thanksgiving break this past year, and they mom and Mike had already bought the place, and I went they had a key, and I went across the street to look at it. Mom was going, I don't know, John, I don't know if it's going to be any good or how it's going to look. And as soon as I stepped in, I was like, oh, the potential is just dripping from everywhere. I had to open my umbrella up. It was dripping so hard.
So John
and I was right
to say that.
I was right.
Well, that's true. And we're continuing to fix it up.
When a place is dripping with potential, that can mean something. Like it needs some work.
Yes.
Well.
And it did. And we've done some of that.
We know that now because it looks beautiful.
Yeah. Well, and there's more coming. We're excited. So that's the good thing.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
Moving on. So John just finished, got his master's at University of South Carolina in public history, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And came down here for a week before making the big move to...
West Virginia.
Because...
I'm getting married this summer.
Awesome. So it's his last hurrah down here with me and Mike and kind of mom's son time.
Last gasp of the single life.
Yes.
So what wild things are you guys doing together? Like, what have you done today? What wild and crazy things?
Oh, we're going out looking at birds...
Went to the celery fields, it's called, here in Sarasota, with amazing birds, I will say.
Saw all kinds of really incredible birds.
Purple gallinule.
Yeah.
An osprey dive and catch a fish and carry it off. That was amazing.
Going to the local pool. Really crazy stuff.
John, all I can say is that marriage can only be an upward
move. Oh, good.
Great. Is that why you came here first for a visit? Should have known.
Setting a nice baseline.
Yes. All right. Enough of this funny stuff. So let's, I want to ask what everybody's reading these days. So let's kind of go around.
Yes. Well, and I'm thrilled to be able to have a real answer to that question, because if you were to ask me that about a month ago, I would have given you a very obscure history monograph that some people would be interested in, but very few. Now I've been able to enjoy reading for pleasure a lot more recently, and something I'm almost done with it. It's by Krista Tippett, who also has a delightful podcast called On Being.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a memoir of hers. It's called Becoming Wise, An Inquiry into the Mystery and Art of Living.
Hmm.
And it's basically, isn't it on NPR, On Being?
Yes.
So, she's spoken with tons and tons of really brilliant people from a variety of disciplines. And it's basically...
I'm still waiting for my invitation. How about you, Melinda?
I wasn't going to say this until later, but I'll be on Being quite soon.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
Just kidding.
Okay.
But it's basically, what she's kind of picked up from speaking to literally hundreds of brilliant people. And it's divided into several chapters that I think are interesting. She sort of Let me hold on. I'm flipping through the book, as you can hear.
Yes.
Each of the chapters has kind of an organizing theme. So it goes words, flesh, love, faith, and hope. Which I think it's neat that she does that. I have a couple quotes here, actually, because this is a book, by the way. If you sit down to read it, you really cannot be distracted by anything else. You can't read it with the TV on or while listening to music, because it's dense writing, but it's beautiful if you really can focus on it. I'll read a section from chapter 2, words. And I think this is, it's just so beautiful. So she says, generous listening is powered by curiosity, a virtue we can invite and nurture in ourselves to render it instinctive. It involves a kind of vulnerability, a willingness to be surprised, to let go of assumptions and take in ambiguity. The listener wants to understand the humanity behind the words of the other and patiently summons one's own best self and one's own best words and questions. So generous listening. What do you think about generous listening in that paragraph?
That's beautiful, number one. I think we struggle at listening well in our culture.
Yeah, and she uses these words like of open-mindedness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ambiguity, mystery, whatever comes. I think that's so interesting. What'd you think about that?
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely enjoy that part. I think maybe my favorite phrase that she says that, and we don't often think about listening in this way, but that listening involves a kind of vulnerability, a willingness to be surprised. You listen to someone, presumably, because you're not sure what they're going to say or you don't know everything they're going to say. I mean, obviously there's sort of small talk and things like that, but I think at the core of listening well, especially listening to someone who you just met or don't speak to very often, you have to kind of make sure that you kind of instinctually know or something like this, that you don't know whatever they're going to say, and that you need to be willing to be surprised and engaged and not react to or not overreact to something someone else might say. I just think that's a really good way to think about listening, is an act of vulnerability.
I think another piece of listening, and I think some of it came through, you know, being involved in media, I think it's really easy to not listen well, to just work at preparing what you want to say next. And so I think there's a real art to listening. And I mean, I think it speaks to that, just what you said, listening with vulnerability. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's active.
Mm-hmm. Right. And to not just focus on your own agenda, because like a lot of times what you'll do when you're listening to someone, you're really concocting what you're going to say next.
Right.
And that, while sometimes useful, isn't always, probably, is very rarely, if ever, the best way to listen to someone, trying to think about what you're going to say next.
Also, don't you think we're not comfortable, Melinda, with silence? I think sometimes why we're thinking of what we might say next is because we don't want to allow any silence to sit there.
Yeah. I think...
Which, especially you two coming from a background of radio, dead air is the devil.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that is that space of mystery too, isn't it? And the unknown and taking in. And I think that we're moving pretty quickly these days too, like texting immediate response. I love that, you know, mm-hmm. I'm a big texter. But I think being a patient listener is important. And I think, John, even what you're saying, you know, listening without assumptions, I think that was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, today we're so like you're either on this side or that side, in politics, in evangelical conversation. It's us versus them. Which box are you in? And it takes a lot to kind of throw that off and listen open-heartedly, don't you think?
It does. And so I have 2 degrees now in history, and a big part of being able to write history well And this applies really to a lot of the human experiences, being able to acknowledge and kind of shed as best you're able your own kind of bias that you have, or the lens through which you see the world. So for a lot of people, it's really not obvious that, you know, because of these experiences I've had, I'm more inclined to see, I don't know, X, Y, or Z in a negative light or a positive light. So that same thing can be applied to with listening. Sometimes it can be really challenging to shed those assumptions. Like, you know, you might expect to hear something from a person. You know, a person's appearance might not always match the story that they're telling, or something like that.
Good. That's good. Hey, I have to say, by the way, I'm impressed that you're even reading a book like that after getting your master's, because after I got mine, I didn't want to read for a while anything. Impressed. Kudos to you.
Well, I if it makes you feel better, I'm also I've also been kind of devouring a number of comic books, so the level of reading that I've been doing has been varied.
Yeah, got ya.
Yeah, it does make me feel better.
I had a post-master's degree reading list, I remember. Like, I threw books on there that when I could read and had downtime, that's what I wanted to read.
Oh, yeah, trust me, it's a list. There's a list.
Yeah, well, because you're a big podcast listener, and you would tell me, oh, I've got this on the list and this on the list, and yeah, yeah, I get that. Any other quotes from Krista? Oh, what were you going to say, Melinda?
I ask you what you're reading. What are you reading?
I'm still reading. I feel like I've said this maybe a few times, or mentioned this book a few times on the podcast, but I'm just finishing up The Soul of a Pilgrim, Eight Practices for the Journey Within by Christine Walters Paintner.
Ooh, that sounds good. I don't remember you mentioning it before,
really?
Actually.
Oh, maybe I've not said it.
I could be wrong, though.
You sent me something so good the other day.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to go grab
All right, you go grab the copy.
And while Melinda's grabbing that copy, listeners out there, write in to my mom and tell us what you're reading.
Well, thanks, John.
Or post John, on the Friends of Midday page, perhaps.
You like the interactive element. Actually, I do too, and we used to have so much of that because, you know, live radio is more immediate, and podcasts, people listen a little bit differently, certainly, but would love to... Yeah,
and Mom, what email can they reach you at? Please tell them.
Look at you.
They want to know.
Yes, they can email faithconvo, faith, C-O-N-V-O, faithconvo@gmail.com. And as you said, people can post on Friends of Midday. Maybe we should have that question. What are you reading these days?
Yeah, so either post on Friends of Midday what you're reading, or email in at faithconvo@gmail.com and let us know.
Yeah, I'd like to. I love that. And I'll read those, of course.
John, you're a pro. Hey, you sent me this great page, Anita, out of chapter 7 with these great quotes. The Practice of Embracing the Unknown. Is that a chapter you're reading recently?
Yeah, that's where I'm in the middle of that chapter now.
Yeah? What's hitting you?
Well, I mean, the quotes kind of grabbed me at the very beginning. I think the big thing that's hitting me is the idea of which I'm aware of welcoming the stranger. And we've even been talking a lot about that on the level of in our country of, you know, welcoming the stranger, thinking of the immigrant and all of that. But then Christine in the book, you know, talks about daily welcoming the stranger. And that stranger, in fact, can be, you know, sadness and grief. It can be happiness and joy. But being ready to welcome whatever it is that comes to you, you know, moment by moment, day by day, hour by hour, because I don't think we tend to look at that whole concept of welcoming the stranger in that way. We're looking at a physical presence that arrives at our door knocking, right?
Yeah, right, right. There's this quote from the page from John of the Cross: "To get to an unknown land by unknown roads, a traveler cannot allow himself to be guided by his old experience. He has to doubt himself and seek the guidance of others. There is no way he can reach the new territory and know it truly unless he abandons familiar roads." Oh, familiar paths are so comforting and so familiar.
Exactly. And
well, it's been funny. So mom's been taking me all over Sarasota, and it'll be great sometimes. I think she's embraced this a lot more in the recent past because Sarasota is so new. But, you know, we'll be driving somewhere and we'll go back a different way. She's like, oh, I love finding a different way home or a different way around or whatever. So I think mom has started embracing that, especially recently. And speaking briefly to the point of welcoming the stranger, I feel like that's a lot easier to do when you find yourself in the position of the stranger for a while, which you and Mike did for quite a while and still kind of do.
Well, and you too. I thought you were talking about yourself. I mean, thinking of, you know, heading from the 4-year experience at U of I and 18 years before that, you know, in the Chicago area, but going just for a couple of years to grad school, I think that was a real transition. And
it was.
And interesting thought of being the stranger, finding yourself in that role.
Well, yeah, well, that definitely changes the way you think about it. I mean, it certainly, I've done a fair bit of moving over the past couple of years, it's been incredible to find the people that do welcome the stranger. Mm. And this is something I was talking about with Mike the other day. You know, for all the people out there that really give Christians a bad name, and you look at them and you're like, why would you do that? There's so many people out there that just kind of show up and, you know, do some really wonderful things. Like when I spent my first few summers working at Harper's Ferry, there's a family that took me in and gave me a place to live or a place to hang out. And I was and am eternally grateful for it. And they'll be at the wedding. So, you know, well, you never know.
Yeah. Cool.
You know, I've been thinking lately that I'm kind of afraid to become the stranger.
Ah, okay.
That it sounds good to start anew. And like, you know, John, you've been going to new schools. Anita, you've moved. You're getting married. You're not marrying a stranger, of course. It is a new land that you haven't traversed yet, you know, the land of marriage. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding there's some fear. There's desire towards something, but it's like, oh, it's just so lovely to know right where I'm going.
Yeah.
Do you guys relate to that?
Totally.
Intensely.
Totally relate. And actually, you know, personality difference. I dove into coming to Sarasota. It hadn't dawned on me that I wouldn't know anybody, you know, because I knew my parents. So, but it just hadn't dawned on me with the weight of the reality until we got here. And then I realized how alone we were. And, you know, then I saw your point, but it was a little too late then. You know, we'd already made the move. And so
how much of that can we get worked out before we take a risk? Like you even getting married, John, you're not keeping any fears or questions from jumping in and doing it. You're like, oh, I gotta do this.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, yeah. I would probably wager that it's impossible to go through life without some risk.
Right. I would even say a lot.
People do a lot to minimize it a lot of times, and obviously in a lot of instances that's a good thing. I mean, you don't want to minimize your risk of like getting in a car crash or something.
Sure.
So, I mean, there's an element of that that's obviously a good thing. But where was I going with this?
Well, I think
someone else saved me.
I was going to say, sometimes
this is what would happen sometimes with my discussion sections at University of South Carolina. I'd start rambling about something, and I'd say, where was I going with this? And I'm like, students, save me. Someone say something more intelligent than what I was saying.
And would they?
A lot of times they would.
Oh, good. Good news. I love it. Well, I was just thinking, as you were saying that, I lost my train of thought.
And of
too.
Course, I ruined, I apologize.
That's okay. You know, hey, that's the beauty of a podcast.
Something about risk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking of, you know, sometimes we try and do all we can anyway to alleviate our risk of failure to the point of not pressing forward and not even not opening ourselves up by not opening ourselves up to the risk of failure. We also don't open ourselves up to that risk of success. We'll keep ideas in because we're afraid they won't be liked, appreciated, or welcomed, when that could be just what the group we're with needs to hear. So I think that risk, you know, I think the way we approach it often is personality driven, but it can be detrimental to not in some way embrace it. I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, actually, that was mostly where I was trying to go.
Okay.
Before I forgot what I was saying. I was thinking of it more in the way that I was going to phrase it was the fear of the unknown, which wasn't that the title of the chapter that you first brought up, the spiritual or the yeah. journey of the practice of the unknown or something?
She's flipping.
Well, yeah, the practice of embracing the unknown.
Right. The fear of the unknown is a very common. I mean, it's at the basis of when you're afraid of the dark, it's because you don't know what's there. And I did a lot of thinking before I moved to South Carolina about why I was so kind of concerned about that, because I was a little uneasy isn't the word, but you know, it was unfamiliar, it was unknown, so I was scared of it to some degree. And it's funny because, you know, for all anybody knows, the destined, you know, wherever, whatever this unknown thing is, could in theory be better than what you have, but you know so well what you do have, and you know how to you know what the good parts are, and you know how to deal with what's not so good. And so what if you can't deal with whatever the terrible parts are? And the focus is never on what if it's so good I can't even handle myself. And, you know, Mom and Mike in their move down to Sarasota, they've found a lot to love down here. And now, obviously, it's not like it. And when, and myself moving to South Carolina, there was plenty of stuff that I enjoyed about it. But that was never, you know, somehow never the things I anticipated.
Right.
When you start becoming concerned about risks and fear of the unknown. So, I mean, it's such a natural human thing to kind of wrestle with and deal with.
Yeah. And I think also we're risking joy as well. Joy is an option.
I know. And, but we never think that, right? That, yeah. I mean, I think when John said about all the great things we found here in Sarasota, that hadn't crossed my mind. I thought, oh, this will be good, but I didn't anticipate the joy. Exactly what you said, honestly. Exactly what you said. Yeah.
It's interesting. You think of that scripture that says keeping your eye on this goal, you know, and running diligently. And I think the difference for us is. People of faith is that we have that to buttress us as well.
True.
Mm-hmm. And community of like-minded others.
Right. We have a belief that things will get better. I realize that's also personality driven, but that we're living purposefully, that, I'm running in such a way as to win, et cetera, that I'll keep doing these things, or even engaging in spiritual practices that can help me along the way, which is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, yeah, especially when you're in a spot of feeling alone. I think I've said this on the podcast, this move has driven me toward Jesus in a way that I hadn't been driven toward him in a long time. For that, I'm grateful. I needed that. And I mean, that's bolstered my inner life in a way that, you know, hadn't been stirred up in a while.
And so, the fear of the unknown can sometimes really keep someone back from something. That's something, I mean, obviously fear of the unknown is something that's hard to, probably impossible to really get over. But it's something worth bearing in mind, the whole idea that, like what Melinda said, that joy is an option, and to really, say, okay, there's probably going to be some very real, you know, challenges on the other side of whatever this unknown change is, that you may or may not be coming face to face with, but knowing that it could provide a whole new set of opportunities on the other side, mm-hmm. and it's hard to keep that in mind as it's happening, but change is difficult, but often good.
Say that again, Melinda.
You're encouraging. That's great.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
What are you up to these days, reading wise?
Okay. Well, I'm reading a couple things. I am reading in 1 John 4 and 5 about God's love, because it's always a thought I have not gotten into. You know how people say, you really need to know that God unconditionally loves you. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of been like, what the heck does that mean? And I think from prior life experiences, it seemed too tender to get into. Mm-hmm. So, in the last week or two, I've been like, okay, that's a risk for me. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to move into this. And so I'm discovering verses about God's love. I think in evangelicalism, a lot of it, the conversation is about the cross and sin and, you know, God's basically mad most of the time. So it's been interesting to read, about God's love, and there's no fear in love. He is love. And I guess kind of my verse I'm trying to even memorize is that, we know and rely on the love that God has for us.
We know and rely on the love God has for us.
So,
and where is that?
1 John 4:16.
Okay.
And so we know and rely on the love that God has for us. So knowing it, and then even in this time of transition, okay, can I rely on this love that he, and what is that, and what does it look like, and can I be open to it? Can I just accept that, you know, this or that thing that, it's not coincidence that it is intentional on God's part to demonstrate love toward me. So that's something I'm reading.
Why do you think it's that hasn't been, or at least we've not felt like it's been a major focus in the teaching that we were brought up in?
You know, for me, I feel like either it was God is angry, or it was this super wild, God loves you unconditionally. And I think philosophically, I had a hard time putting my head around that. What does that mean? So it seemed like it was one extreme or the other to me. It was either underrated or overrated.
I hear you.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I think I want to raise the white flag and just say, God, what the heck does this mean? What does unconditional love mean? If I accepted that, what does it look like? Where do I need it? How do I even know if I would see it? And what does it mean to trust in your love? What does that mean? So I've been looking at Bible verses, see in my journal.
Ah, yes.
God's love.
Okay. I love the hard paper journal.
Yes, sirree. You know, lots of times the psalmist was saying, put your hope in his unfailing love, rely on his unfailing love. God is love. This is love, not that I've loved him, but he loved me first. Like I was thinking, I really need to make a decision to love God because, that's what he deserves. And Dave and I were talking and it's like, no, the whole thing about God's love is that it's first from him. It just doesn't even seem fair.
Isn't that interesting?
It's like, why do you even want to have this with me? Mm-hmm. I think that's turning into kind of this, my evangelistic message. It's like, look outside. That person who did all that doesn't care anything about your crap. He really loves you.
I think another piece of it to me, even hearing you talk, which I love hearing that and those thoughts, I think more of us have those thoughts than might even admit it, who are sitting in the pew of the average church, say. But I think the other piece of it to me is seeing that if I don't take that message in, then I can't really give that message out. If I've not taken in his love, I don't have a whole lot to give out. We use the word love for so many things. I appreciate in other languages where there are
multiple
words and meanings for the word love, you know. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. We just have that one word, which I think also makes it problematic. But I appreciate hearing you talk about it and talk about your study here.
I'm sort of in this place in life where it's like I want to figure out my faith. you know, this stuff that's been like on the train, you know, on the rails, just going back and forth from A to B all my life. No, you know, it's got to make sense. What does it really mean?
Well, a metaphor that I really enjoyed, and I didn't read this entire book. So it's by Sarah Bessie. It's called Out of Sorts. And the way that she put it, and I wish I had it in front of me so I could read this. I love quoting things. It's great. It's the historian tick in me. But the way that she says that, you know, every so often you need to have sort of a rummage sale, and you sort through your faith. You decide what should stay and what should go. And, you know, obviously, especially in terms of faith, these things don't happen overnight. But every so often, and I think all of us are in a place where we're having one of those rummage sales. We're kind of figuring out what we want to keep and what we want to discard that maybe was once useful to us. And that's something that's, I think, hard when you look back and you say, oh, why did I ever think or believe this? Well, it was useful to you at some point in time. And if it's not now, that doesn't mean you necessarily need to look back on it and say, oh, how awful was I that I thought that, or whatever. I mean, I don't really have anything in mind. Anyway, yeah, just that.
Yeah, I don't even think I'm looking for permission anymore. It's like, I'm just doing this.
Right, well, yeah, exactly. But for a lot of people, it starts with looking for permission. But yeah, I mean,
that's a benefit of becoming older.
Yes. I'm
good.
With you there. Yeah. You got some, you do have some good things to look forward to, John.
I do.
It's like, look, you know, how many decades are left? How do I want to live?
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to figure this out? And I think needs, of course, stimulate a lot of faith search as well, because mm-hmm. what do I need for this that I don't possess? And if I say I'm connected to this God, then how does that integrate right now, other than the standard operating procedures of my past faith journey, which may be a little bit old and stale and unbelievable?
I like hearing all those words, the descriptors mm-hmm. there. I think also the faith journey piece, I think need propels us forward. I think fear at a certain age kept us from moving forward. I think it takes us to a certain age, or maybe it's not just chronological age, but somehow there's a point of fear that we have to get over, because we do get afraid of what people think if we offload certain aspects of our faith.
I think we also were in a structure in our previous employment mm-hmm. where questioning was not part of the deliverable, you know.
Yeah.
So there wasn't, you know, we had an unusual circumstance in which our faith journey was uniquely tied to our profession.
That's true too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as we're talking about all this, the one biblical story that keeps popping up in my mind that I've been circling around a lot recently is that of the prodigal son, and that when you boil it down to its basic elements, the young son goes off and does a bunch of bad stuff, the old son sticks around and does a bunch of good stuff, and they both think that they're too far away from the father because they're either too bad or they're too good, something like that. But one of the big messages of the story is that they were both the father's sons the whole time, irrespective of all the good and all the bad stuff, and that's, I think, the hardest thing to sink in, is that the kids were just playing a totally different game than the father was playing. It's just a different game, different set of categories and questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
I can't take credit for that. That's comes from a couple podcasts Rob Bell has done recently.
Oh, okay.
Weak is the new strong.
Ah,
on the
that's
Rob,
right.
The Robcast.
Okay, all right.
It's just a different game than especially in kind of modern America. You know, you go through those days and you say, oh, today was a good day because I did X, or today was a bad day because I didn't do Y. You know, regardless of X or Y, you're still the father's son the whole time. He's not playing that game.
Ah,
it's such. I think that's such
that's
a great
freeing.
Mantra.
That's beautiful.
He's not
actually.
Playing that game. I seriously think it's beautiful. So again, I can't take credit for that.
Yeah,
I'm writing it down. He's not playing that game.
Yep, loves just, us no matter. You said you were reading several things, so I don't know.
My other thing is from this book.
Oh, yes.
And what is that book for our loyal viewers?
Viewers, listeners. The Language of Letting Go Journal. So it's this, you know, meditation book and journal for daily reflection. So Melody Beatty, so appreciate her. She's written a ton on codependency, and I have her daily book because I really needed it for a period of time, and I still pull it out regularly. You just pull that out more recently, I think, or I can't remember.
I was cleaning out books for the to give away, and so this was on the shelf, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm not really into that much.
Yeah, letting go, who needs it?
But I'll look up today, and this was May 1st, but when it opened to that.
Ah, that's it, right. God's will, June 29.
Yeah. And so I just stuck in my head, look at June 29. So I brought it out here in the kitchen and I opened it up and here it's on God's will. And I was like, oh my goodness, or something like that.
Yes.
Wow. And want me to read you a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, please.
Please do.
This is this whole, like, I'm seeing a theme here. This risk, moving forward, doing something new.
Mm-hmm. This is good. We're tying it all together.
Yeah. So, she writes, God's will most often happens in spite of us, not because of us. And I think in evangelicalism, there's sort of this training that you don't do anything until God, you know, everything is a burning bush.
Yes, right? It all has to line up and you've got to know before you move.
Right.
You can't trust yourself. Only God knows. So she says, we may try to second guess what God has in mind for us, looking, searching, hyper-vigilant to seek God's will as though it were buried treasure, hidden beyond our reach. If we find it, we win the prize. But if we're not careful, we miss out. She says that's not how it works. We may believe we have to walk on eggshells, saying, thinking, and feeling the right thing while forcing ourselves somehow to be in the right place at the right time to find God's will. But that's not true. His will is not hidden like a buried treasure. We don't have to control or force it. We don't have to walk on eggshells in order to have it happen. So she says, it's just a couple more paragraphs. It's right there inside us and around us. It's happening right now. Sometimes it's quiet and uneventful and includes the daily disciplines of responsibility and learning to take care of ourselves. Sometimes it's healing us when we're in circumstances that trigger old grieving and unfinished business. Sometimes it's grand. She says, we do have a part, we have responsibilities, including caring for ourselves, but we don't have to control God's will for us. We are being taken care of. We are protected. And the power caring for and protecting us loves us very much. If it's a quiet day, trust the stillness. If it's a day of action, trust the activity. If it's time to wait, trust the pause. If it's time to receive that which we have been waiting for, trust that it will happen clearly and with power and receive the gift in joy. And then there's this little prayer at the end, kind of a takeaway. Today I'll trust that God's will is happening as it needs to in my life. I won't make myself anxious and upset by searching vigorously for God's will, taking unnecessary actions to control the course of my destiny, or wondering if God's will has passed me by and I have missed it.
Wow.
Yeah, that was wow for me.
That's
yeah.
rich.
Because I've been feeling a lot of anxiety, like, I'm supposed to, you know, I've been unemployed now for almost 2 years. What the heck? What's going on? What should I be doing? What am I doing? You know, people ask you, what are you doing? Right, John? People are going to say, well, what are you going to do now?
One of the worst questions. I mean, you're curious. It's genuine curiosity. But I always get a little nervous whenever I ask that question to someone else because, like, I hope I'm not, like, feeding into that sort of anxiety.
Right. And I think it's like anyway. You said, until you're the stranger or you're wearing that, it's hard to really know it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I just loved this part about, you know, if it's quiet and there's work to be done, unfinished business, some grieving, whatever, I find that's really been true. That space has been a gift. And if it's a day of activity, good for that. So I think it's been very settling for me. This idea that God is not all like hepped up. Like I am, or others are. Like,
yes. I love that.
Well, and the whole idea that whatever God's will is, it doesn't always have to be some sort of life-changing decision at every every minute. You know, one of the like the questions that I would sometimes get asked by Christian folk is like, you know, what are you learning recently? What's God trying to teach you recently? And first of all, I think that's a really intimate question. But second of all, it like has this implication that you, and I mean, obviously you should always be kind of working and learning on, you know, about things. But I mean, sometimes, you know, there are some days where it's just sort of a day and that's just what it is. And it's not like, you know, well, back to the whole idea of not playing that game, you know, the goal of every day is not to have some sort of grand new insight about something necessary. I mean, if it happens, that's great. But that's not the point of the day. The point of the day is to just sort of be. And, you know, obviously you're working and striving for a variety of things. But the point is not to always... Well, anyway, that's my point.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's interesting that it's a... quote can be used as a kind of quote measuring stick, and I like that you said that's a rather intimate question.
Agree. Yeah, very good. I like that. I'm thinking of someone where we used to work who came in our office one day and said, well, we haven't burned out for Jesus yet. As if okay, you're right, well, let's keep going. It's, you know, I've loved sort of having this time of quiet in my life where I can just learn God's presence in almost a much deeper way than this works kind of stuff, where it's like, is the engine roaring at top speed at all times?
He's not playing that game.
He's not playing that game, yeah. And don't you think some of this time has been recovery from burning yourself out for Jesus, you know, if you will. I mean, that kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, doing the work of unfinished business. I think in the Old Testament how there were these huge gaps of time where people were just being shepherds and just being people of commerce and just growing their food.
You're hitting on a delightful historical thing that a lot of people don't think about, including historians a lot of the times. But, you know, whatever gets written down and whatever we kind of know about a particular experience is only an infinitesimal amount of things they actually did. I read this article in grad school. It's, you know, delightfully nerdy. It's called The Archival Sliver. This is all about, we only have a sliver of all the things that have ever happened in human history preserved in archives. So when people are like, oh, we're going to go do archival research, at best they can only reconstruct a sliver of all the experience ever. And the Bible is kind of along those lines, you know. So if you want to know what Jesus' life experience was like, we only have a sliver of a sliver of that.
Oh, and the Bible says that, too. It says if everything was written about him, it would fill all the libraries in the world.
Right, at the end of John.
That's a tiny version, don't we? The tiny one.
Yeah, tiny, but that's not usually how it's...
Right, and so
spoken out.
And part of it is, you know, why didn't people write down this stuff? Because it was boring. They were just sitting there eating food,
sweeping the floor.
They're going to the bathroom or something. I mean, you don't want to write about that. There's no reason to.
Yeah, there you go.
I shouldn't say there's no reason to, but very little.
Yeah.
Bizarre reasoning, I guess. Never mind.
No, I like the great point. I love that.
Yes, I know.
Well, okay, I think we've talked about a variety of things, and I've also, you know, kind of put out there two or three good books that you might want to take a look at, too.
So check
we'd
out...
We'd like to hear from you and what you're reading, as well, as John said earlier. But go ahead, John.
Well, I was just going to summarize. So what are you reading, the listeners? We're reading Becoming Wise by Krista Tippett. Something about pilgrims.
The Soul of a Pilgrim by Christine Walters-Paintner. I'll post all these at the homepage at anitalustria.com.
And Learning to Let Go by
Melody Beatty.
Beatty.
I can't say I'm really reading it. I found that one thing. And, oh, I forgot to say, when I went back to what was on May 1st.
Well, reading has a variety of meanings.
You know?
May 1st didn't float your boat.
No, it's just like, okay, this was meant to be. And, oh, maybe it was God's love that, you know, orchestrated that. I don't know. But anyway, it is a good book in general. And the Bible, I'm also reading that.
Well, yeah, John, 1st and 2nd John? Or?
First John.
First John.
John 4, yeah.
All right.
And the Prodigal Son, which is in Luke.
Okay.
And Robcast, Weak is the New Strong.
Man, you got a lot of work for me to do. A lot of posting. That's good stuff. I appreciate it. Thanks.
And this has been delightful, too, because this has been such a kind of meandering that, like, this is what a real conversation. I mean, not that I'm implying all of your other podcasts have been fake conversations.
Thanks.
The parody of faith conversations, fake conversations. That's not what I mean to say.
No, but you like conversations better than an interview-ish,
yeah.
Which I do too.
This has been such a delightful conversation because it's been meandering, and you know we started somewhere and sure is not where we ended. Anyway,
you are an old soul, John.
Yes, that's all I know.
I was talking with my friend Wes the other day, and we're talking about how much I'm enjoying visiting Mom and Mike, and basically we made some comment about how Wes and I would have to move down here. But I was like, well, that might be kind of a problem. It's like, there's an age restriction on the community, and you have to be a minimum age. And I was like, I said to Wes, well, Wes, I think you and I could make a case that we could be let in early admittance.
Hilarious.
You old soul.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, that's too funny. Wow. Well, Melinda, thanks.
Hey, congratulations, John, for graduating, getting your master's, and go get married. Yay.
I'll do what I can.
Do what I can.
I'll do my best.
Funny, guys.
Four. Yay. You and Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
hope to be there.
Yes. Yay. I hope I'll be there. So I'll see you.
Good.
Yeah, I'm going to be whispering in your ears, John, remember that podcast on taking risks?
Yes. You're
walk down that aisle. There's lots of joy ahead.
You can do it. Mm-hmm. Oh, you guys, you're fine.
He needs to be convinced.
Yes. All right. I wonder if Sarah shouldn't listen to this one. Just kidding. All right, everybody. Thanks for being here. Let's wrap it up. I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.